All right. Well, shall we?
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff we need.
Let's get going.
Let's do this.
All right. Thing. Welcome back, friends. Believe it or not, this is probably the most productive we've ever been as far as episodes consistently coming out. So
that means it's going to end soon.
Yeah, it's true. We'll take a break again for a couple months probably, but we are back. And we are excited. We're going to be talking about a couple upcoming shows here in Chicago this coming week. And we are very excited for our guests today. We are pumped to have Kata Mark Gardner and Willow Caitlin McClay joining us on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
We need people to say things that are smart on here. or else Will gets mad at me because I'll just talk about the Kansas City Chiefs the entire episode.
Yeah, but, it's no sports.
Well, I have been monitoring somebody's tweets, and someone's tweeting a lot about football. So if we want to talk football, Caden, I'm ready. You want to talk about what happened with that Bears game? What the fuck's going on there?
Yeah, so I'm like, while there are trans men who get MFAs in poetry, I'm a trans man who cares about sports. I'm on Blue Sky. I haven't been on Twitter since 2020. Tweets, skeets, posts, whatever. I just keep posting, and I do post a lot about sports.
And I post a lot about Godzilla.
Right.
See, now we're talking.
Yeah.
There's something for each of us here.
It's actually like, I saw it was National Gamera Day a week ago today. So I'm like, I didn't celebrate. I should have.
Oh, right. I didn't know that. We would have been celebrating as well. Shit.
I literally just showed at the draft house, we showed the Snake Girl and the Silver Haired Witch, the only other film by the Gamera director that is not the big turtle monster. Wow.
That's a fun movie too, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yep. Well, first up, we are going to be doing a screening of the previously lost film, Scarecrow in a Garden of Cucumbers, at the Music Box Theater on December 3rd. So that is Tuesday, coming up here in a couple days. As we said, we put these up pretty quick, so this episode will be up tonight. But so Tuesday, come join us at the Music Box. We've talked about it a bit on stage, and there will also be a Q&A after the film. Me and Caden will be getting into the film and the book as well, which is for the reason for the season. But we wanted to have you all on and get into Scarecrow a little bit and why this movie matters. Oh, there's a kitty.
Yeah, that's Kermit. And if you want to like come down to the screening, I recorded an intro for this, and my orange cat Kermit was sitting on my lap while I was recording. So if you ever wanted to see Kermit on the big screen, this is your chance.
That's right. First and last time. We're just saying that for promotional.
You come for one reason.
come see Kermit.
Come see Kermit. Yeah, no, we're excited. This is a rare one for us. We don't ever really show a movie that no one's really ever seen before. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got the sort of notice that this was getting restored kind of towards the end of us sort of putting this book together for publishing. After watching it, it's a little bit of a shame that we weren't able to add more space to it, but its star, Holly Woodlawn, is definitely given her flowers in our book, and I think this movie is a great showcase for her. An interesting part of doing research on Holly is she does mention the movie in her book, A Low Life in High Heels, which is a great book, and I recommend people reading it. She talks about around that time how she was getting notice outside of that sort of inner circle of Paul Morrissey and Andy Warhol, who she obviously worked with on Women in Revolt, Trash, where she gives a great performance. She actually got a notice from Ishmael Merchant of Merchant and Ivory, and that was when he and James Ivory were still not quite known yet and internationally renowned, but he actually had offered her a part in a movie they were doing called Savages. Not to be confused with Howard's End or Remains of the Day in terms of their output. It was actually closer to them trying to almost ape a Louis Buñuel style. She
Probably would have
turned
had
it
a lot
down.
to add to Remains of the Day, I would like to say.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen her in that, quite honestly. She probably also would have done well in The Wild Party, which they made in the 70s as well.
Yes.
But she turned them down to make this movie where she had a more starring role. And when you see the film, you can kind of definitely see why it appealed to her. It's this fish out of water story. It's this very excitable movie, very much an underground independent movie set in New York, featuring a lot of characters you would only see in New York, like Tally Brown, who was a good friend of hers. And it's very much, I would say, very much in the tradition of, say, a Robert Downey Sr. type of movie,
Oh, absolutely.
but
Yeah.
although a lot more loose. And I kind of joke about it almost being almost like a Sesame Street episode for adults. But in other ways, I actually do earnestly believe that to be true as well.
Way more gags.
Yes.
Way more gags, way more bare asses than Sesame Street. But yeah, no, I mean, this is really nicely. I mean, this is probably one of the more freewheeling things we've shown. And if you're listening, you'd just seen us do Little Murders at the Music Box. I think there's a
Oh yeah,
you're in
definitely.
similar territory.
Oh yeah, they definitely hang out. Yeah.
Yeah, one's a little less dark and bleak, but
Yes, if you're one of the people, and it doesn't happen often, but there have been folks who have said to us before that they wish we showed more things that were a little bit lighter. We normally don't, but this time we're showing something that is really, really, I think, celebratory of Holly and just the scene as well. So it's, you know, if you need some good vibes before dealing with the hell that is Christmas, come to the show. It'll be great.
Yeah, and I've put this online, but Caden thankfully corrected me on one name that I fucked up. But if you're one of those people that gets all your t-shirts at Target of bands and you have a Lou Reed shirt, you're gonna love that Walk on the Wild Side. Holly is the very first person mentioned in that seminal, possibly overplayed song in the Lou Reed canon. But hey, she's right there along with Little Joe and
Jackie
God, Jackie
Curtis.
Curtis. See, I did it again. I just want to get
Yeah, it's
candy.
okay. It's okay.
You love candy. It's
I
okay.
love candy. I'm sorry. I don't know what you
Yeah. I actually recently purchased something on eBay, and like, I'm really that I need to. My New Year's resolution is to cut down on my eBay purchases, but I found one of Jackie and Holly posing in front of like a promotion for their review they did in the 70s, I think 74, and it's just a gorgeous photograph and stuff. And I'm like, damn, love this. I've never seen this photo before, so I bought it. And
I
I'm
mean, you gotta
like,
do it.
I'll justify it. It's I hope I really hope I that residuals check we get for this book isn't handsome enough because of all the money I've spent in this.
Well, Black Friday, the deals are still going. Am I correct? You all are the books for sale on the OCN website?
We have it for sale on multiple presses, including Vinegar Syndrome, which actually does sell books in addition to the cult films and smut that they sell as well. And it's been selling well there. And yeah, it's basically available wherever where all books are sold. I recently found a copy of my book at the Barnes and Noble, where I used to go to when I would cut class in high school. So
Oh, that's sick.
that was a very nice thing to sort of see as a full circle moment. If you are one of those people who lick the boots of Jeff Bezos, I guess you can buy it on Amazon too. But I would strongly suggest supporting local independent bookstores. Like, and if you need a reference point, go to bookshop.org, all that stuff. We've been told that this has been selling well and it's been a success. So I guess we can delude ourselves in believing that we are this great, important book, regardless of what the New York Times says.
Oh, the failing New York Times.
Daily New York Times. Can't believe they found 100 more important books than ours. Do that.
No, they're too busy building supporting the Biden regime right now.
Yeah.
They're busy.
Also, if anyone wants to buy a book in person at the screenings, there will be copies of the book available at both shows.
And if you want to buy it on Vinegar Syndrome, you can pick up a copy of They Call Her Macho Woman as well, with a commentary by us. If you love this episode, get all of us in one purchase. Bundle that shit.
Yeah,
we're doing great cross promotion here.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and at these events we're doing at both Music Box and David's Theater, I will be there. If you want my signature, I will agree to sign it. And if you already have a copy of the book and want it signed, I will be willing and able to sign them.
And if you want my signature, get on a plane and come to Canada and track me down.
Yes, we are sad also that you can't join us as well, but
Yeah, it's a whole thing. Getting your passport totally correct when you're a trans person is a headache as is, but like when you are also trying to do it after you've immigrated to another country and gotten your whole citizenship and everything lined out in another place, it's just there's a lot of red tape, and it's a whole thing.
yeah,
We
well, hopefully.
highly recommend watching Isabel Sandoval's Lingua Franca on the Criterion Channel,
Yes.
included in our book, which actually does outline this exact situation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Isabel and I like fucking bonded over like just passport annoyances, and it's just, Yeah.
Yeah, well, hopefully it comes to an end sometime soon, and then you can come also to Chicago. And then
That would be great.
we'll do the double feature we talked about before we were recording.
Yeah.
Let's get into let's talk about this hypothetical double feature that we were proposing.
Yeah, so we were talking about bestiality in movies, and
As we do.
as we do,
It's a casual
and
combo.
John correctly brought up, as we thought we had run through them all, George Eastman's solo directorial effort, Dog Lay Afternoon.
Yeah, big shout out to Sam Deegan for turning me on, literally, to Dog Lay Afternoon. What a film, you know? You just think you've seen it all. But we're this, yeah, we have another movie. This is a good shift over to our
Oh,
other.
wait, we have to put the double Dog Day and Dog Lay
I think
when you
they
come back.
can figure out where we were going with that one. But we got dogs on the mind, you know, and we do have to hype another show because we're business people here. We're all about the money. So we have another show coming up on Thursday,
December 5th.
December 5th, and that is going to be at the Davis Theater, where we have our series Trust Fall. If you don't know what that is, it's a mystery screening. It's a blind screening. You go, you buy a ticket, we play something, you have no idea what it is, but the critics are saying, along with the Chicago Reader, we have not failed you yet. So trust us, because this we've it's been great. So this one is especially exciting for us. And Seth, you're a dog lover,
Come through.
especially if you're one of those white women living in one of those high rises in Fulton Market. This movie's for you. Sorry to bring you all into this smut here. We're just a terrible people, but we
I love this because it's such a change of pace for us, because Caden and I have done so many podcasts that are like academic in structure and being like, oh, your book is being taught in these college courses and everything. And we're like, okay, but like let's talk about Italian filmmakers from the 70s and 80s who are completely deranged. Like it's a totally different speed that we can also engage with. This Trust Fall movie that we're going to be screening has, in my opinion, some of the best close-ups a director has ever given a trans woman on film. So there's a hint for you.
Yep.
And it's a precursor to something he was going to do even grander, in my opinion, with this actress as well. God, it's so hard. I don't even, I'll let you all figure out how to tease it because we will obviously blow this badly.
So we've talked about this actress in another podcast, Sleazoids, in another film that she was in with another trans woman called Ava Man. And I will say, just basically do the math from there in terms of who we're talking about. But the interesting part about this trans performer is that she was stealth for most of her life. And I think the interesting thing to talk about as far as stealth trans performers, which there are some notable ones, I would say the most notable one in America was Alicia Brevard, who sort of detailed about the fact that she had these opportunities. It's kind of interesting to see her name sort of be presented as the first trans woman to play a superhero in a movie, but or a TV show or whatever.
It was
And
Batman.
but she was like stealth at the time. She didn't come out until later in life when she had her memoir out. And even though she would later reveal that she was a showgirl in San Francisco, was in a whole sort of trans ecosystem up there, who performed at Pinocchio's and a bunch of other places. She knew Harry Benjamin, and it's like, oh, okay, you weren't just passing along completely undetected. You were tied to these communities. And this trans performer in the movie we're showing had also a very sort of stealth life, where she ultimately left the United States, and basically found a very flourishing and notable career. And I think she would have basically had she would have she obviously was famous on her own right, on her own terms. But then you find out this little bit about her, and it's interesting to sort of see her talked about now as this sort of icon. But again, this whole relationship with being stealth for her life, it kind of is this very interesting sort of discussion to have about being a trans performer. And we in our book we talk about a trans film image and what does that mean. And I think coming into this sort of conversation about a stealth performer kind of makes that a very sort of complicated thing to talk about. And Will is a lot more versed in this performer's career than I am, actually, so I will give it away to you.
She is quite iconic. I'm doing my best to talk about her without talking about her. She's in a number of significant films from a very significant director who our two hosts are very familiar with.
Listen
And
to this fucking thing. You can take a wild guess who that
yeah, we care a little bit.
yeah, a small interest in this director, one might say. But yeah, she worked with him numerous times in primarily in the 1980s, and she was for a little while kind of this significant player in the exploitation and sexploitation film scene of Europe in the 1970s, and or not the 1970s, 1980s. And her career was cut short, tragically. I'm giving people more information, but
They figured it
she
out. They
had
figured it out 20 seconds ago.
they're gonna figure it out. We're narrowing it down.
Sure.
But She carved out her own niche in the film industry, and she's still being talked about today. And I think that even if we didn't know that she was a trans woman, she would still stand out in this lexicon of screen figures of that period because she was very captivating. She was significant enough for them to think that she could stand alongside Laura Gemser in Black Emmanuel movies as kind of like a double. She's I don't know, this director in question kind of treated her like a goddess. Like, he knew her screen power. Like, he positioned her in a way where, like, very much he was commenting on her beauty, which is interesting in hindsight for a director to treat a trans woman that way, because he was looking at her without all the baggage that people usually look at trans women on screen. There was none of that kind of trans misogynistic gaze. It was just like a regular old sleazy cisgender heterosexual gaze, which,
You get it.
you get into all of these complications when you're a woman and you like movies of this sort. But, it's interesting to look at her career in hindsight, particularly in the ways that her body was filmed, because you get a lot of sequences where, like, they're normalizing her body in a way, and trans women at the time were very much fetishized. And I'm not saying that she wasn't fetishized on screen, but she wasn't being fetishized in the way that trans women typically were. So you get images in the movie that we are showing in Trustfall. There's like a close up of her vagina. There's a close up of all different parts of her body, but also there's all of these other beautiful situations in that film where she's being filmed and just giving very good classic traditional close ups. And I think that if you are fond of this particular actress, you will greatly admire seeing this movie on screen. Should I just say who the actress is? Jesus Christ, this is hard.
We're
Yeah,
just let's look at the movie because everyone's figuring it out. It's fine. Let's
we're talking about Ajita Wilson,
yes.
and we
Someone's
fucking
like
love
listening.
Ajita.
Someone just spit their water out. Like, what?
We couldn't be stealth any longer. We had to clock ourselves. We had to clock ourselves.
It's difficult to hide, to keep a secret. So we're being metatextual here in a way. Like the secret movie is starring this woman who lived her trans life in secret.
This is like
This
a
is this is
Russian doll.
layered. This is
Yeah.
layered.
You don't come to
It's
us for
nesting. It's
simplicity. You
nesting.
come for complexity,
That's right.
layers upon layers. I mean, and like you said, I mean, she was treated like a goddess, portrayed as an actual goddess eventually. And yeah, I mean, I think what was also going on in this country that it's from, everyone's like, what country could something be? But it is
We're
little.
talking about Sweden.
Yeah, we're talking
Yes,
about Sweden.
Sweden. Ajita Wilson's famed time in Sweden.
Yes,
Yeah,
yes.
Norse goddess
I
Ajita
mean, why not though?
And Sweden so famously had this early 80s period that embraced a lot of this stuff that was, yeah, seen as part of its fascist government. Yeah, Sweden under the dictatorship of Generalissimo Franco. No one talks about that a lot, and they should. The long arm of fascism reaches. But yeah, I mean, I think to some degree that is probably why she flourished, was just what was going on there at that time. And it's for a guy who Letterboxd reviewers like to say fetishizes, there's he almost tips it, because it's like, is it? He just loves the female anatomy. He just loves when, like, it's so earnest in a way, and often his wife. So
Oh,
it's
yeah.
yeah. I always talk about him
Such a wife guy.
being
Yeah, we need to consider him in our wife guy programming.
I was just listening to the episode you did with Liz Purcell this morning and how she wanted to run like a series about wife guys in cinema, and I love that idea. And
Cassavetes, let's get Rob Zombie, let's get
yeah, we get them all. I mean, because we want to do a counter series, which is the hot wife series, of directors, who love watching their wives have affairs on screen. So we'll We'll get those in there with some Abel Ferrara film.
Is it too insensitive to call it cuck as a programming?
I think that's fine. The cuck series. Get cucked.
Yeah, get cucked.
Get just cucked.
Make it easy.
Yeah.
Come to the music box and get cucked.
Yeah. Come get you. We will cuck you motherfuckers when you see us. Don't worry. Bring your girlfriends. Put them on stage with us. See what happens. Okay.
Well, I do think I love too about Ajita, and especially even outside of the filmmaker we're talking as well. I think really she just found this world of fucking freaks that she was so excited to be with. Because you know, like worked Joe D'Amato as well, and there's I'm forgetting his name, but the Greek pornographer who did The Mark. She's in, I think it's called Erotic Passion, one of his pornos that she's in.
I know what you're talking about.
I just think she's like, man, this world rules over here. everyone just wants to like fuck and party and have a great time. I don't know. You can just feel it because she truly. At least I'm not seeing everything she's in yet, but there's yet to be a performance where it doesn't come across that she feels like a fucking powerhouse, and it's so infectious, you know?
Yeah, we Kate and I talked about this a little bit in the Sleazoids podcast, but one of the really cool things about Eva Man is like at the time we didn't have subtitles or anything, not that it fucking matters, but like you know, the star power of Eva Robbins and Ajita Wilson, just it comes at you, you know, like the camera obviously loves these women and they loved being on camera. And you can absolutely get that feeling even when you're watching them do really horrible things or, you know, they just loved being on film.
Or just outright silly things, because
Eva Man
is like a very silly movie.
Eva Man also feels like Sesame Street compared to what we're playing at this Trust Fall series.
Yeah.
And even this is like the most cartoonish version of this type of genre film.
Mm-hmm.
It's like comic book transgressive.
Yeah.
If you take that movie seriously, there's something you have to figure out with your medical professionals.
I mean,
on another level, you know, the movie's like above the ground, kind of floating level.
You know what's just like so broken about my own like cinephilia brain though? Like I rewatched this movie the other night and I was just sitting there like, well, that shot looks like John Ford, you know, like, you know, and, you know, like on the docks with like the sunrise and everything and like the dock worker just walking up the boardwalk, and I'm just like, that is so gorgeous. Well, and, to even talk about like the fucking sword fight on the cliff.
Well, that's so Canadian.
It's gorgeous.
It's so Canadian of you to say that.
Well, if you one of our Patreon episodes, we actually, because I finally read Lena's book. And in that, the interviewer asked her what her favorite filmmakers are. And she was like, well, me and Jess, it's John Ford always. Like, that's the first.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
oh, it's so good.
And and you get that with, I mean, I think we just gave away the director, but like, you know.
Someone still has their pen and they're connecting everything. And they're like, don't
get it. And like you get that with Jess Franco sometimes too. Like you look at his framings and everything, especially when he's doing like these very wide shots. He's like, you know, it's like that old Spielberg story of like framing too much at the top or the bottom, and then you get an interesting image. And Franco does that all the time.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was gonna say, and this is probably why people like Orson Welles really liked him and respected him.
And also why. They shared the same DP in a couple of occasions. Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Gary Graver.
We miss Gary all the time.
Yeah.
An excellent image maker. So
it doesn't matter anymore.
Now it's just down to which one of the movies they did together.
Hopefully the distributor is not listening. You're not.
I'm very curious about what the reaction is. I'm assuming the people who kind of have an idea of what we're talking about are going to be completely chill with it. I'm just very curious if there's going to be a very earnest trans person academic background who's going to be like, oh.
It's funny because Caden and I have 1 foot in your world and 1 foot in like the academic world and everything. And it's like, you know, like there might be some people coming to this screening who are expecting like something like kind of, you know, I wouldn't say rah-rah necessarily, but like I don't think we cover anything quite as transgressive as what this movie gets into with a lot of depth in our book. But it's only be the only reason why we didn't like dive into this particular subject matter completely is because it would have opened up a whole can of worms in looking at movies
Yeah,
of this type, and it would have made the book humongous. Yes.
would have been twice as long because, like,
Yeah.
we could have done a whole chapter on the trans performer Sokka, but we
Oh,
couldn't
yeah.
really do
Yeah.
that. And yeah, and you know, like we've done stuff with adult performers like Carter Marnier, and when she mentioned of how the people who have worked in adult films or just adult images, the trans performers have done arguably more than the mainstream. Actually, to me, not arguable. To me, it's a fact that they've pushed forward the sort of idea of trans bodies as desire and normal in ways that the mainstream have not been able to present. I definitely agree and co-sign that. But at the same time, that is almost a different book because we are kind of tackling the sort of history within mainstream image, mainly because of the ways in which the whole political and cultural conversations and dialogues that surround that. And also, of course, more American based. And while we try to include as many foreign language and art house movies outside of our country, outside of North America, it is more focused, obviously, American centric. So that also is why some of these films that Ajita did aren't quite on our
We,
list.
yeah, we very briefly touched on the Mondo films in one of the chapters in our book. But if we had continued to go down that path, we absolutely would have like ran into Ajita Wilson. She's in Porno Nats of the World, which Laura Gimser hosted, and it's just like, you know, which is a crazy movie
Yeah, it
since
is. We're not showing
you
you.
know.
We're not going that
I'd
far.
show
If
it.
anyone listening is worried about this trust fall, we're not going
They're
that
like, I saw what
hard
they did to mice in the last trust fall. I am do not. Well, yeah, no, that's not happening. The one time we're gonna probably show animals dying on screen.
Yeah, and again, it is interesting to sort of present this movie of, again, a stealth trans woman with the sort of political fury in the United States regarding the fact that these brain dead Republicans seem to think that you can immediately clock a trans woman going to the bathroom. Meanwhile, Ajita Wilson was able to basically live out her life on her terms without anyone realizing her trans status, mainly because she didn't disclose to them. And that was her right to do that. And it's every trans woman and trans man's right to not discuss or disclose on their own terms because it doesn't matter. Don't be a crybaby bitch about that. Let them poop, let them pee.
Yeah,
Yeah,
listen,
exactly. Yes,
we
exactly. Let them poop, let them pee.
absolutely will respect Republicans' favorite pastime of trying to clock trans people going to the bathroom.
An
If you can
obsession.
respect, if you can respect them, okay? We know you love it. We know
Don't
you
do
love
your
it.
voice. Don't do the voice.
Well, you know, I will say this: if you poured over all of Corpses, Fools, and Monsters, you read it front to back and backwards, Japanese style, then you can now take these lessons to this movie. You can apply all these
Yep.
lessons and you can do it yourself.
That's one of the cool things about our book, if you don't mind me gassing up my own book, but like, you
Yes.
know, we kind of lay a groundwork for people to actually engage with images of transness on screen, whether that be cisgender filmmakers throwing in jokes about trans people or making movies about trans people or trans performers and movies directed by cis people, which is the case for our Trustfall movie. And for our movie Scarecrow in a Garden of Cucumbers, which we didn't really talk a whole lot about. You know, we've been beating around the bush for this movie we can talk about, and haven't really been talking about the movie we can talk about.
I mean, you know, it's again a fish out of water story. A girl coming to New York City, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and she meets and hangs out with people. There's a point in which Holly interacts with a version of herself in male drag that looks like the Andy Kaufman character, Tony Clifton, which absolutely, I think is worth the price of admission alone. Crazy. And a lot of, again, crazy stuff, again, in the key of those Robert Downey Sr. movies and a lot of New York Underground at the time. I'm not quite familiar with Robert Kaplan, who directed the film, but yeah, and you know, it's
Kaplan did a Jaws spoof called Gums, which is just
Dick sucking mermaid.
It's fucking awesome. Liz Purcell showed that in New York at the Draft House in a fucking mall on 35mm.
And that's why Liz is the best, you know.
Okay. That's also, yeah, also
that's why she's queen. Yeah,
yeah. And, it was this movie was written by a lesbian. I'm blanking on her name, but one of her other credits was a ABC After School special about a teenage alcoholic.
Absolutely. Yes. Yep. And you know, there are characters here where their names are Eve Harrington, Rhett Butler, a lot of old Hollywood, and you know, we've sort of touched on queer films and their relationships to old Hollywood text or old Hollywood characters, whether it was like the Gay Girls Writing Club's All About Alice, or they're All About Eve spoof, the Cockettes performers loved old Hollywood. I mean, you know, we've talked about documentaries where, say, one of the trans women took on the name Harlow after Jean Harlow. And of course, Myra Breckinridge is probably the biggest example of this sort of attachment to old Hollywood types. And sort
I flirted with the idea of naming myself Kim Novak for a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, why not?
There's no better alliance than trans women dolls and these sultry cisgender women with smoky voices, in my opinion. Like, to me, that is just a beautiful, special relationship of allyship, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A stunning endorsement. I don't know how anyone could not come to see this movie.
Yeah. One more thing about Scarecrow in a Garden of Cucumbers. Wicked just popped off. Don't take your phones to this screening. But like, this is also kind of like a Wizard of Oz kind of movie. Like, it has that kind of template to it.
Yeah,
it's totally like bonkers
and a lot more fun. And
I believe Holly's character is actually from Kansas too. And
she is.
That's 100% intentional.
Right? Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like this was a time where there were people still pushing the idea that Stonewall happened because they were mourning Judy Garland. So think about that for a moment.
Well, yeah. And also, if you know, unlike Wicked, this movie has a lean, mean runtime.
Oh yeah. I think even with the Q&A and the introduction and all the previews, it will still clock well under 2 hours, 40 minutes.
Yes, but they told the whole fucking story. There's not a second one to get the rest of the story.
No sequel.
Holy crap. How long is Wicked?
2 hours, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Movies are too long.
That's not it. And guess what, Willow? It's just part one.
Yeah. So
there's going to be a second part.
And people wonder why I spend all of my time watching Italian movies from the 70s that are like 80 minutes long.
Yeah, if y'all don't want us watching extreme exploitation and porn so much, make better movies that aren't 2.5 hours. Then we'll watch those too.
That isn't now being touted. I saw a thing by the Hollywood Reporter today saying that, like, if your vote didn't count in the election, your vote will count by going to see this movie, because who does that wizard remind you of? And it's like, oh.
Are you serious?
Oh, we're so broke.
No, 100%.
Stands her.
I saw it. It was the Hollywood Reporter written by Seth Abramovich, and I'm like,
yeah, right, that piece. Like,
It gave me like these acid flashbacks, 1,000-yard stares to when Hillary Clinton was saying, "I'm sorry, Greta and Margot, that you didn't get nominated for Oscars," or something like that. I'm not one of those people who are no politics, but I'm like, I do not need politicians to insert themselves into the Oscar race.
No.
And I don't need the Academy voting body to be like, I think, I won't do the accent, but that this is, you know, this is your form of voting, you know, going to Sweet Green for lunch. It's like, then you go and you see Wicked, you do your part. Wow. We're in a bad place. Speaking of which, because I don't know anything about this, I just keep seeing this pop up online. I know it's because there's a trans character in it. I'm just very curious if you know what this is. What the fuck is Emilia Perez?
Oh my god.
A movie you should not watch.
Oh yeah.
Watch Scarecrow and a Garden of Cucumbers instead.
Okay.
If you want another trans musical recommendation, we recommend City of Lost Souls by Rosa von Fraunheim. Again, a very lean, mean, and also I would say very much in line with presenting trans women expats like Ajita, Angie Stardust, Jane County. They're fun. You'll have a fun time. You'll laugh at their songs. Much better music, in my opinion, than whatever the hell Emilia Perez was doing. Yeah, it stunk. You can read my review of it in Reverse Shot. I do not like it or care for it. I think its greatest crime is that it's boring as hell. And it sort of teases at wanting to be transgressive, but in the end, it's like earnest. And it gives a lot of weird respect to a drug cartel.
Okay.
Lord character.
No.
Is sorry for being a drug lord and cartel leader. So we have to just accept that and be told that she feels bad, but never really feel like that change of heart happens. I don't know.
Oh, this is Odiard, the prophet asshole.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's way too earnest of a filmmaker to get away with trying to do something that, again, it's a lot more fun to watch Holly Woodlawn have her Dorothy in Oz moment on screen. Then watching Zoe Saldana sing about vaginoplasties.
I was telling Caden that the only worthwhile thing about Emilia Perez is if a trans director makes a satire of it about how clueless cis people are making movies about trans people right now. Because I think that's the only way you can actually extract anything interesting from it is if you just flip the mirror back on them and being like, y'all are fucking stupid.
Well, yeah. Just say nothing about the myth of drug cartels also. We don't have time to go into that today, but that's a whole other fucking bunch of bullshit going on.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's interesting to me that organizations have not so much condemned, but kind of sort of said this movie's stupid. LGBTQ organizations, mainly because I'm like, well, I've seen you like co-sign a bunch of like earnest work, and then I find out it's because you basically did consulting work with these filmmakers. And I'm kind of like, so you've had these conflicts of interest that you've basically pretended didn't exist when praising a film and giving them an award at one of your galas, but this one pushes it too far. Again, I think it's more that it's boring in its cluelessness rather than anything that is something that should be taken to the head or something like that. There are many trans movies that have offended me me and ones that even were recently made. And some of these even appeared at LGBTQ festivals. So it's not like we're the best at self-curating in many ways. So it's a bad movie. I think our movie is just better because it is better and funner and also a lot shorter than
Yeah,
American
it
Idol.
also like one of the biggest things to convince people, if you do like musicals, don't watch that movie. Watch Scarecrow, because that's one of the another piece on the shit pile is that dude clearly doesn't give a fuck about musicals or understand them. It's
Oh
so like
yeah.
everything, the
Yeah.
way it's shot, songs, all of it,
Well, I'm seeing
terrible.
Zoe Saldana's in it, and that's enough for me to not check that fucking thing.
Yeah, and again, he dared to bring up Jacques Demy musicals, and I'm like, don't
Yeah.
even dare, don't even get me started.
Okay.
Criterion Channel has its good things and bad things, but it brought idiots to be like name checking, like, oh, it's a little like the Umbrellas of Cherbourg. It's a little like the Yellow.
Yeah, because they talk about serious issues. Like, give me a break. Like, Busby Berkeley movies were talking about the Great Depression and the forgotten men of World War One. There's always been socially conscious musicals. Have you listened to Free Penny Opera? Give me a break. Anyway, one other important fact about Scarecrow being a musical is that Holly, even though this film gained this reputation of being a lost movie and it didn't quite land or give her this mainstream success in the way of which she got the same attention for Trash, where she legitimately had an Oscar campaign and had these praises from people in the industry. It didn't really take off for her, and that's a shame. But she still seemed to have a lot of good memories of working on that movie and also with the songs. One of the funniest parts of reading her book is when she talks about how she performed at a benefit for herself, and the benefit was basically to promote dealing with drug addiction and to basically have spotlight the seriousness of drug addiction. And again, she performed at this benefit for herself regarding her own drug addiction, and she performed the songs from Scarecrow in A Garden of Cucumbers. And I
Please.
think that's fantastic. I'm like, thank God for Holly.
Zoe Saldana would never.
That's right.
That's right.
That's the thing that's so cool about these Warhol superstars that were trans women. You know, we talk all the time about like Candy Darling and everything, but like Holly Woodlawn is extremely modern. Like, can you imagine if she was like she would have like the most popular like TikTok account, Twitter account, whatever, because
He would have a podcast.
she would every single thing that she does is ironic and sincere at the same time, which
They're
is
trying.
so difficult to pull off,
They're
you
comedic,
know. And you
really.
and
Yeah.
it's remarkable, and like you can see her influence has like trickled down into the way that trans women communicate with each other now. Like you see it in movies like Stress Positions and The People's Joker. Like if you want to get like really film historian about it and everything, if you watch this movie now, you can like draw a line from Scarecrow in A Garden of Cucumbers and the way that Holly Woodlawn interacts with people, the way that Candy Darling interacts with Holly Woodlawn and Jackie Curtis and the Women in Revolt, to the way that like these trans femme shit posting movies are getting made now by like Louise Weird and Vera Drew, and like these things are like, we don't have a great grasp of our own cinematic history because the movies just weren't widely available for a long time, and in some cases still aren't. Like this one just got rediscovered basically. But we've always been around, we've always communicated with each other in this way, and you can kind of like watch a movie like this one and look at a figure like Holly Woodlawn and understand like where we've come from as trans people and the way that we're still kind of the same way that we were. You know, there's a lot of respectability politics around trans people, like, well, you know, how should a trans movie look and feel and everything? But I think that the true essence of like a real kind of trans femme energy that you could bring to movies now is just be completely anarchic in the way that Hollywood one was. And I think that some films are very much reproducing this now from some of our newer filmmakers that I just mentioned. Like, this is a really cool movie. And if you care about transness on screen at all, this is such a gem. And I'm so glad that everyone is available. Everyone is getting the chance to see it more broadly than they did many years ago, because even when Kate and I were working on this book, it wasn't available. We heard word that it was being restored, but we didn't see it in time for our book. And if we had seen it in time for our book, obviously we would have inserted into our section on Hollywood Lawn, where we went into all of the other films that she did in the 70s.
Well, I can't think of more glowing endorsements. If you've been at every one of those People Jokers shows at the Music Box, do your homework, come see the movie that started it all. And come pick up a copy of the book. There will be copies of the book for sale at the Music Box, Corpses, Fools, and Monsters, until they run out. So maybe we'll save some for the mystery show. But who knows what the bum rush is going to be on this. So, and again, if you bought it, bring it. Caden's going to sign it. He'll draw something in it, probably. I don't know.
Again, if you want my signature, come find me in Canada.
Yeah. Get together like a big crew. Just rent a van, drive up, get those signatures.
Somebody once asked me to, at one of the book stops, to do a self-portrait of myself with my signature on the book. And it was basically just me doing a stick figure of somebody with a baseball cap and a cigarette hanging out of my mouth. So whoever got that, I hope you love that.
Yeah.
Preserve it forever, because I've only done that once.
Well, maybe twice.
Maybe it'll be twice.
We'll see. Those are going to be rarer than hen's teeth, those books. So, well, unless we have any thoughts on the Detroit Lions, Green Bay Packers game coming up.
Pure.
Oh.
So, go Lions, because I feel like I think I made a prediction earlier this year that because this is an election year, we're due for a very apocalyptic seeming world champion, much like the Cubs in 2016. And I think the Lions might be it.
Well, if the Chiefs don't keep the kingdom, you know, we'll see.
The Lion Kingdom.
Hey, listen, Chiefs fans, I'm happy the Lions are doing. And if I could wish anything, it's the two of them in the Super Bowl together. Right, Will?
Yeah, sure. That's awesome.
Okay.
I love it.
Speaking of apocalyptic images, Godzilla Minus One just came out on 4K, and it's great.
Perfect way to round the episode out. Well,
thank you both so much for joining us. And we're very excited for these shows. It's going to rule. We'll see all you Chicagoans out very soon.